Welcome, everybody, to Football is Life. It's Season 3. It's Episode 3. I'm Chip Sutterth, and today we are talking about 4-5-1. Tonight, we are joined by, one, David J. Lohr.
I'm also going to be talking about 25 or 6-4, because it's a good song.
And one, Kelly Guimont.
This podcast is a construct, like gender and many of the alphabets.
And I've just got one question. What's today's Wordle?
Ethic.
And boy, howdy, was that probably a bit of a signposting for this episode, and dare I say possibly the season. We've got a lot to talk about. One of my theories of this episode and of this season is sort of, is Ted closetly toxically positive? Is this toxic masculinity thing actually pointing towards him as well as the rest of society and all this other stuff? But we'll get into that, I am quite sure.
Oh yes, as soon as we take a moment to talk about Julie Andrews.
Andrews. F yeah, Julie Andrews.
I will say, for me, it's Victor Victoria Julie Andrews. But, you know, that's because I like Jim Garner and Robert Preston, too.
That's why I watched that movie.
I will say, yeah. It's not the best Blake Edwards movie by a long shot, but the movie S.O.B., that version of Julie Andrews was very effective in my teenage years.
We might as well just jump into it, I guess. We are under orders to be focused by our substitute host this evening, I should point out.
I should say, Chip.
Yes? Chip,
you are an angel for stepping into host.
Well, thank
David,
you very much. Thank you very
why
much.
Why would you demote him? He is clearly a god.
This is true. I used to listen to Chip hosting when I was a little host.
Oh, God. All right, let's move on, shall we? So 4-5-1 begins with Colin having an actual private life, having an actual story arc for us.
Yeah.
He is a deeply capable man, but he also
I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah. But he's also hiding a secret from the team. He is a closeted player. There were hints. There were clues. Apparently, the actor was one of the last to know.
As often happens. Mm.
But we get a peek into his life, and I think it's really good. One of the things that I've discovered about Ted Lasso is, as the cast has expanded and as we've taken more time with each of them, we're actually getting, you know, there's so many planes flying right now the title characters got a little bit less time on the screen. And, you know, you get a few lines from Danny Rojas here. We get a few lines from Sam Albisania here. You know, this is kind of Colin's moment, and I'm gratified to see it. I'm gratified to see the question of masculinity in sport go to this obvious place.
I'm gonna jump in and say props to Colin, because he has excellent taste.
Yes,
I mean
yes,
yeah. I mean, he's quite a catch in his own right. We did get to see his bare behind, and briefly for a moment, unless you are strategic with your pause button, I've heard. And
scrabble.
Yeah, and the thing that I thought was kind of interesting was that he showed up at the end, and was cool with saying he was Colin's wingman and making jokes about hitting on girls badly, you know, and I thought it was kind of interesting that he was willing to do that in order to get to spend time with Colin. It sort of felt like he was probably making a little bit of a trade because he probably doesn't want to do that. So that was part of what caught my attention about it. And of course, as you know, because I used to do the Westworld podcast when Westworld was still a going concern, this episode spun up all my Westworld theory muscles. So
say more, said the man who has not seen an episode of Westworld.
Well, we'll get there. before we get that far off the field, I just want to say this opening has one of my favorite techniques for opening a show.
And that
which is and it's something Jason and I have talked about for years, how we love setting a format so you can screw around with the format. Because, you know, he's about to leave. He gets in his car, Colin, he's about to leave. And he goes,
Marcus Mumford kicks in.
I'm a strong and capable man. Yeah. And he hits the, what is it? The wheelie bin.
The bins, yeah.
And immediately Marcus Mumford stops. It's like,
yeah, it's the equivalent of
capable man.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of the car crash that happens during the teaser in an episode of L.A. Law, and the trunk closes and the license plate flops off.
My other favorite example is also L.A. Law, where Arnie Becker is being confronted by a magician and knife thrower who he screwed in a divorce case. And the knife thrower is throwing knives at him, pulling them out of his trunk. and Arnie's assistant comes in and says, and immediately Arnie just starts yelling, close the trunk, close the trunk. And the credits start.
Getting back.
So fun.
Yeah, I love when, because it's season three and like we kind of like expectations have been set in certain ways. And I think because they're not, we don't hang a lantern on them most of the time on this show. It's even more noticeable because we're not pointing at it we haven't been pointing at it for two seasons already. So then when it happens, then it's even sort of more underscored that all of a sudden everything is different now. And I got a kick out of that, especially because it calls back to earlier, you know, when Colin was going to put his car keys in for the exorcism because he's like, oh, it's way too much car for me. And, you know, every time we see him in that car, it's, you know, it's a disaster.
and especially in a series that has had just brilliant musical choices all along, thank you, Krista Miller. This is an episode that has it's like next level.
It's
music
out,
choices.
It really
and so
yeah.
It's wonderful to have just that moment of like, pay attention to the music because we're gonna have fun with that this time too.
Yeah.
Before
the
we get
end
to
was one of my favorite endings. I know we'll talk about it later, but musically, because of that, the end of this one was one of my favorites because that's one of my favorite songs. So
before we get to your Westworld-esque theorizing here, I want to give. Well, that would explain some stuff that happens later here.
Zava is the final Cylon. Oh, sorry.
I want to give a shout out to Colin and the character has been the butt of so many jokes over the last two seasons. He has been a victim of Nate's cruelty and just the general butt of jokes and Jamie's. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cause that was one of the ones that got called out when Jamie came back. Colin was like the first one to come and say, you called me a worm, in a profile for my hometown paper.
Yeah. But in his element with his lover at home, he is a strong and capable man. He is comfortable in his own skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like seeing that side of him. And I'm very curious about where this is going to go because, you know, fast forward to the very end of the show and Trent Crim walking out of the party sees them making out and you wonder where this is going to go.
That's my Westworld theory muscle, Chip, because what is going to be the life cycle of that information now? and where could it go? And so immediately, like when it was over, I was still enjoying the song because I did sort of appreciate that this all went down as we are listening to a song titled Everybody Knows. And it was, and as soon as it was over, then Mr. Kelly was like, okay, I'm sure you have a theory. And I'm like, I have a bunch. Is it going to be like, is Trent going to sit on this and wait until he can put it in the book? Is he going to sit down with Colin and go, I know. And do you, you know, is it okay if I talk about this? Is he, you know, is he going to haul off and do it anyway? Is he going to just not say anything? Or is he going to try and have a conversation with Colin that's like, I know, and I just wanted you to know that I know, and kind of leave it up to Colin to steer that big gay ship? Like, I don't know. And I'm really interested to see where this goes, because we've had two seasons with these characters already, and I want, and we've seen them evolve, we've seen them change, we've seen them be different than they were before, because Trent doesn't have an immediate outlet for that information anymore, like he did when Nate came to him and said, let me tell you why Ted really walked off the field, off the pitch, sorry. Let me tell you the real reason why. And he was ethical enough at the time, to bring it back to today's Wordle, he was ethical enough at the time to go to Ted and say, because I respect, like, because I'm a journalist, I had to write that, but because I respect you, I wanted you to know my source was Nate. And it ultimately cost him his job to hold that ethic. So, because I'm just going to keep coming back to that, because I think it is a much bigger thing than it was sort of played out in the middle of the episode. But it was, that was part of why I was very excited to get to talk about this one, is because I love that song, and Colin got way more interesting, and all the, like, because it was a thing we didn't know. And so watching it be confirmed and seeing him out of context, just like when we get the moments with Sam at the restaurant, that is Sam for us, that's Sam out of context, because we've seen him sort of in relation to Richmond, to Richmond FC. And this is like unrelated to being a Greyhound. And so watching that happen was really interesting. And you know, it's something that I've enjoyed in the first few episodes of this season, is how everybody's different. You know, Jamie is very grumpy about the new guy. Like, if Jamie shows up next week with a full beard and a short haircut and a black t-shirt on, I mean, I'm sorry, a dark heather charcoal t-shirt on, I will not be the least bit surprised. He made all the right faces. Like, in my mind, I mentally was filling in Jamie and his accent making Roy Kent noises when Zava came in and was, like, talking to everybody. So... yeah, it's been, you know, it's fun to watch him be in that place now as kind of the old guard, and it's fun to see how different they are now than, you know, where we left them, because we're still kind of, you know, establishing everybody's place in everything. So
yeah. just jumping back to Colin again, and Trent, what's really interesting to me is I love giving Trent another moral ethical question.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is he going to do with it? Is this part of the Cinderella story of Richmond this year that he's going to, you know, that he's lucked into covering? And the other part being, what is Colin going to do? Is he going to voluntarily come out? Is he going to try not to? And if he does come out, are we going to find that that's part of why he's always been clumsy, is hiding this? And that once he's out in the open, he is in fact a strong and capable man.
And comes into his own.
Because that's what he is at home, in private.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful story.
And the reason I am not 100% convinced what Trent Crim is going to do is partly because, you know, he did out his source to Ted. But also because the only time we have seen Trent Crim independent outside of his context, you know, of sort of being the reporter, is when he bumped into Ted afterward and asked Ted about it at the pub down at the Crown and Anchor. And he was walking out with another man and had his hand on his arm or on his elbow or on his back or something. And it looked like they were together. It was very, very brief, but again, Westworld muscles. it was very brief, but he like touched him like we know each other very well and was like, I'll just be a minute, after he saw Ted at the bar and went over and asked Ted about his food poisoning, you know, which obviously did not happen at the Crown and Anchor. So, you know, Esme thanked him for that. And then he left, and, you know, and he was like there with someone. So like, does Trent also have a sweetie at home and is also on Colin's team? And maybe that's going to change what he would do with this information. So
there are plenty of opportunities here. There's been a lot of speculation about Trent's own sexuality and fandom. And I think that it could go either way as far as that piece of the story is concerned. I think the most rich thing about Trent Crim right now is he is truly independent, and he is not going to necessarily tell the story of the team for his book that he would have done for the newspaper. So it's wide open what he is going to do with this information, whether he is going to do anything with this information. It's TV. He's going to do something. You know.
Yes. We all know something. It's just what. Yeah.
He might hold on to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with what he's doing right now.
It might be sit on it. It might be, you know, he's a bit older than Colin is, and he may just go sit with Colin and be like, you know, it's been really hard for me all this time, and I don't know that you necessarily would be coming out in an environment like I would have when I was younger, and, you know, maybe people will be more accepting of you, and the world has changed since then, and so maybe it won't be quite so bad. You know, nobody cares who I go home to at night or whatever, you know. So
and having faced his young writing career with Roy, and
which
how that
was
affected
one of my
Roy,
favorite things of all of the show, I think, not just season three, but all of the show, that moment I really, really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. Right.
And so that's an interesting quandary for him to face now.
What is he going to do? Yeah. What's he going to do? It could go anywhere. Let's veer, you know, one thing, this is going to be an excellent segue. I just know it.
the way you move this podcast, Chip. Like
the
premier
to me, I will find you.
So the Premier League in real life, there are no out players in the Premier League currently. So it would be a dramatic thing in the real world for Colin to out himself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the real world and the world of Ted Lasso, it's an intersecting Venn diagram. It is not a complete circle.
Correct.
And one of the reflections of that lack of reality, even though he's modeled on a real honest-to-God player, we got to talk about Zava. And we've got to talk
about
his impact.
Hang on.
Everyone is talking about Zava.
I have to meditate first.
Do I need one of those ringing bowl things or one of those kintsugi broken bowl things? We'll get to the bowls.
We'll break the bowl and then we'll repair it.
And we'll repair it with gold to make it more beautiful.
So
Zava, I knew you were going to say that.
Zava is something that the show has needed. I am a hockey fan. I have
an agent
been following,
of chaos.
Yeah, I'm a hockey fan. I've been following a team for the last 5 years, and one thing that happens with athletic teams that hasn't happened to a great extent in Ted Lasso, because again, not entirely real, is that the players change sometimes dramatically. They added Jan Haas in season two. To provide a little bit of sandpaper. but for the first time, we have a serious change in the locker room dynamic, if you'll excuse the American phrase, with the introduction of this hyper-individualist caricature who resembles an actual honest-to-God soccer player.
He resembles athletes, because like I see NBA players in him, I see football players in him. Like I've watched my share of pro sports, and every once in a while he will do something, and I feel like mentally I can map that back to, you know, that quarterback that won the Super Bowl, or, you know, someone that was on the team that won the NBA championship, or whatever it is. Like, you know, it's not just football. Like, I'm sure in some professional sport, at least in the United States, there is a person who has a tattoo of themselves on their back with their arms up in the air.
Well, he is very much a pastiche of the player whose name I am going to completely mispronounce. Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and thanks to our compatriot Moises Chuyan, he sent me a link to his first ever Major League Soccer goal for LA Galaxy, and it's the same person.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But in the
Wait,
language,
he's the veggie dog vigilante.
What?
Really? Nothing? Okay. I thought that would land better than it did, but okay.
Lo siento. So in the language of the show, he is just hyper weird, hyper present, hyper individual, whether he's leading the team in meditation in the locker room or literally rising above every other player to header in another winning goal. he eclipses everybody in the room, including our coach, literally, from some of the camera angles. And this has been
fun to watch that. I just have, as he stood there and kept moving back and forth and Ted kept trying to peek over his shoulder. Like, David, it's so funny that you're that I'm sitting here talking to you about it, because I thought of you going, this is a thing David would do if this
was totally
happening.
Is. I know. either position. I would totally be, you know, I'm going to stand here now. And I can
you'd absolutely write it. Like, this is absolutely
the thing that I would it's that weird subtlety thing, right? Like, I would totally be Ted, just kind of sliding over here. See, I'm still here. Oh, now I'm going to slide over here. And it's just, it's again, beautiful, simple visual comedy.
So what do you guys think of the character and the fact that he is just so dissonant from everybody else on the screen? So different from everybody else who's been in there. He just sort of absorbs all of the attention, both within mm-hmm. the fictional locker room and when we're watching the damn show.
I like him. The two things that I'm already looking forward to, and again, this is, you know, putting on the writer hat. This is how I would do it, probably. First of all, finding out what is wrong with him, right? He can't be totally perfect. I mean, we've been using songs.
Well, we know he's not, because he bounces from team to team to team.
Oh, I know. But he's got to be more than simply a great player who doesn't listen to anybody but doesn't need to, and it's fine. You know, we've been using a lot of Jesus Christ Superstar on the soundtrack this season, including, and this is delightful.
Song.
It's one of the songs was from the version performed by Murray Head as Judas. Yes, that is Anthony Stewart Head's older brother.
Yes, that Murray Head. If
also,
you're thinking,
probably
didn't he sing
best
a song about playing chess somewhere? Yes, that was it.
Yes. He's
hey, it's that guy.
He's probably best known for One Night in Bangkok from Chess.
He is. If you know him, that's why you know him.
Yeah. And I mean, years ago when I found out, oh, that's Anthony Stewart Head's older brother. Yeah, that tracks. I hear it. And so they're leading into all of that. And I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar just cracked me up when the title song started playing.
Oh, I laughed so much.
And, you know, again, perfect choice. So I'm curious about where is his flaw. Yeah. I'm also curious about what happens by the end of the season. We've already had in the first episode, Roy Kent does Chekhov's mention of the film Hoosiers, right? So there's your template.
Delightful, and I loved. Yeah, I picked that up way before Mr. Kelly did, and as soon as he started describing it, I just started laughing, and he's like, "What is he talking about?" And I'm like,
"Yeah,
it's Hoosiers," and then he goes, "Gene Hackman." Rah, 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 rah. I'm like, see,
and why the is it called Hoosiers?
Yes,
and,
like,
and living in Indiana, that's especially delightful.
Oh, of course.
So you already have the reference to Hoosiers. But if we look at Richmond as kind of the Bad News Bears, Zava is Kelly Link, who is the ringer player, and then something's got to happen to knock him out before the end of the season, because it's kind of cheating if they win it all this season totally on the back of Zava. That doesn't count. It has to be our guys, our team.
But that's not
on the whole.
That's not how this show operates. So, like, that's not how it's going to happen. I mean, we got relegated at the end of season one, you know, the amazing goal, you know, that whole, you know, if you're somebody like me that wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to like story structure and just caught up in Danny scored, football is live, you know, like, was brutal to come down off of that, you know.
But that is perfect first act. That's the end of the first act. You're at your lowest point. You have to come back in the second act, and the third act is where you win it all. And they're doing the sports tropes. They're not not going to cheat us at the end of the third season.
No.
So it's
not going to cheat us by letting it be Zava either. That's the thing.
Right. It's got to be more than just Zava.
Yeah.
Because that would not be fair.
A thing I'm glad about with this season, partly because it's the final season of the show. I have theories about what's going to happen after this season, but Chip, it will shock you. I have a theory. I run a home for crackpot theories for people who didn't remember that.
I just want Roy Kent hosting a self-help radio show in Seattle.
See, now that's all I wanted too. Okay, so now I have to stop thinking about that because that would be amazing. But
come back to us, Kelly. Come back to us.
I'm trying.
After Lasso.
Yeah. Well, so the thing, like, one of the things with the season is like everybody, you know, like we've seen everybody, you know, grow and change and develop, and you know, coming into this, like, the big thing at the end of the season is not going to be the end of the Premier League season, like. You know, I mean, it might be, but like the big thing that we all sort of had set up for us at the end of season two was Richmond versus West Ham. And so now, like, it looks like that's going to be the next episode, you know, like because we watched them climb through the ranks. They kept doing the, you know, cutting to the standings and showing Richmond clawing their way up the standings. So now it's going to be, you know, I thought that was going to end up being a thing that happened way later in the season, so I'm glad we're getting it soon. And that makes me very happy. And I'm wondering if maybe that's going to be the moment where Zava kind of comes apart, and so Richmond kind of wins it legitimately, so that Rebecca can beat Rupert legitimately. I know he's going to, I know he gets to win because then we get to beat him down extra. And
that's right.
I'm just a person who finds that fundamentally unfair, and I will be very shouty. So next Wednesday, if they're playing West Ham, if you're really quiet at about 6 o'clock Pacific, you will hear me shouting at my TV.
Because it will be
so unfair.
They're going to play West Ham. Nate and Rupert are going to send everyone to get Zava, and they're going to hurt him. And that's what's going to knock him out so that West Ham wins. But the final is going to be the rematch. And that's where Richmond wins.
Okay.
Wow. So that is so tropey. And I know that the point is sort of that three act structure. We're going from Star Wars to Empire to Return of the Jedi, and
they're going to be Ewoks.
We have
Roy Kent. We have Roy Kent. That counts.
But
oi, yub nub.
So that's the sports arc of Ted Lasso.
Right, but, which is not the main story.
So the main story is about, as was shared with James Lance, who plays Trent Crim, he had a conversation for about 3 minutes with Jason Sudeikis after an early season one filming block.
After and, his first episode.
Yeah, and Jason led on to James that this is a show about bad dads. And one of the things that yes. we have been dealing with Ted so far, in my opinion, is all of the cracks have been showing in who Ted is for a while now. Mm-hmm. And in the early in the first couple of episodes, he is struggling to be a leader because he wants to he wants everybody to go along and get along and to build a family here.
Yeah.
Probably because his real family life is really, really spiraling. And he hasn't really moved on completely beyond, beyond the divorce and the separation from his kid. So where I'm going with this is that we have multiple characters who are in broken relationships now and who are trying to find themselves, and who are feeling overshadowed. Roy by Keeley, Ted by, well, Zava. And also his former marriage counselor, about which more later.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get into that.
Nate feeling overshadowed by Roy, Jamie feeling overshadowed by Zava. We've got a lot of stuff that's being set up right here about characters trying to become the best version of themselves, which is something that Ted told him and told Trent way back in season one that was his old philosophy. Yeah. What I'm fascinated about is where this show is going in terms of where how all of these characters are going to find themselves, and specifically about Ted, who is feeling he is starting to have these panic attacks because he feels useless. He feels overshadowed.
And
that's
superfluous.
Not good. Superfluous, yeah. And that's not good. And he's not dealing with it well. And I think the show knows that. What do you two think?
Yes. I agree. Next.
Well, I think that, well, I want to expand a little bit just because I think it's interesting, you know, that you said it was a show about bad dads. And I think it's partly, I think part of that is Ted being in the position of having been abandoned. And then additionally feels like he is doing the abandoning. Cause like in episode one of this season, he's right. talking to Beard about like, is it a good idea for, you know, us to be here? Like, is it was crazy for us to come, but is it more crazy for us to stay? And that's part of what I think is kind of driving him. Like, for Ted, like season one was we see the cracks start to show in Mr. Positivity, like in the moments when he's alone. You know, we get that moment at the end of the first episode when he said when he's talking to Michelle and he says, you don't have to say it back. And he, you know, you hear his tone completely change when she gets on the phone after he's been talking to Henry. And we see him, you know, a couple times. If you go back and watch season one, you see a couple of times where he looks down and kind of runs his thumbs over his fingertips, which is the move that we see is like him going, ooh, there's a panic attack coming later on when once we've quantified them a little better and he knows what's happening. And season two is sort of about him like admitting that and letting some people know that, yeah, like I have some cracks. It's not all sunshine and biscuits up in here.
And recognizing
it within himself, being able to say it out loud to somebody so that he can try to get, you know, get some, you know, some spackle over that, you know, maybe it's buttery, who knows? You know, for some people, you know, butter is very good spackle for emotional pain. And so I think we're going to see more of that with him in this season. I'm curious, you know, because I know him and Trent talked briefly about his dad, like sort of, you know, casually, like on a very high level, like how he had a relationship, a good relationship with his dad until his dad passed away. And Trent mentioned that, you know, his dad's was the first one to make the joke about, you know, now this just makes you Trent Crim independent, you know, which I appreciated. they did hang a lantern on that one. You know, that's absolutely a dad joke. And Trent's like, yeah, my dad made that joke to me already. So I'm curious to see kind of where this is going to go for everybody in that. And that's part of why I'm very interested in what Trent is going to be up to for the rest of the season. And as much as he makes me mad, I kind of also want to see what Nate's deal is going to be as he kind of ends up in the same, as he ends up in the same place. Like he is like, I think he believes that Rupert genuinely cares about him. Something's going to happen that's going to show him that like Rupert really doesn't have a single solitary F to give about Nate, you know, as long as they're not winning or not doing whatever it is that he, that Rupert thinks that West Ham should be doing. And I'm wondering where that's going to put Nate, because he sort of, I sort of got the impression, you know, he moved to West Ham and now that's going to fix all his problems, right? And now he has this nice new car, but he still doesn't have love and attention. And like when he figures out, when he goes down the Jamie path, right, and figures out that you know, Ted wasn't actually stepping on him, and that the reason Ted's the picture Nate gave him isn't in his office is because it's at his house so he can see it every day, and all those kinds of things, like what's going to happen when Nate realizes the good thing that he had before.
Yeah, it's about his storyline is about Nate becoming the best version of him as possible, but he had to become the worst version first. He had to get to that point, and now he has to come over here to the dark side and see just how Palpatine-y Rupert can be.
Yes.
And, you know, and we're already seeing cracks, right? He shows up in his tiny little car and he's not sure where to park. And he goes, well, this is where I'm supposed to park. So I'll park here.
Watching it get towed was really funny.
That's the thing is, you know, he's not brave enough to step up and say, wait, I think that's my car. You're having them tow away my car. And it isn't, you know, it takes a long time for that to come out. Right. Mm-hmm. And then he embraces it. He's like, well, now I have a new car. Okay. Well, but the cracks are there. Yeah. And so that's going to be interesting to see. Is he going to be redeemed?
And we got some, you know, and we got some with Rebecca at the beginning of the season. Cause you know, she was explaining how, you know, Rupert's not in her head anymore as her ex. He's in her head now as owning a rival club, and she actually wants this one to win now, which was not where she was at the beginning of season one. And you know, and how it was very funny to listen to her explain the difference between the two.
Yeah.
So,
which makes her a really good segue as we're talking about cracks and we're talking about Rebecca.
I knew you were gonna say that too.
Yep. Let's go to the bowl. Let's go to the Kintsugi bowl.
You're welcome.
And let's go to the psychic. And this is the part of episode 3 of season 3 where I'm like, boy, I hope the show isn't going to do that. Mm-hmm. And that is green matchbook, Shaitan Nining armor, thunder and lightning, upside down and drenched. You will have a family. You're going to be a mother. There are some things that I really don't want lampshaded, and I really don't want the I really don't want the magical realism or whatever of a psychic who actually gets things right to intrude on my Ted Lasso experience. What do y'all think of that one?
Whenever they do something like that, though, we always kind of get it like sideways, right? For lack of a better term, like some things are a little tropey, but they're not 100% by the book. Like when we get some of that stuff. So I think, like when she said, "I see thunder and lightning," in my head, all I heard was Roy saying, "You deserve someone who makes you feel like you've been struck by lightning. Don't you dare settle for fine." And so that's what that's like in my head, that was the thing that was going to happen. And so then because I heard that when that's what the psychic was saying, then later when we actually got the green matchbook, that's what made me think that it was going to be Sam, and that, you know, something about, you will be a mother is going to be like when she meets whoever that person is that's going to change her life, that is going to make her feel like she's been struck by lightning, that. It's like it's someone who already has a kid, or she's going to end up as some sort of mother figure to somebody. You know, like if they were saying if the psychic had been saying this to Keely, it would be like somehow Phoebe ends up being like a semi-permanent resident on Keely's landscape. Right. Not like we still get to be friends and hang out, but like you live with me for extended periods of time for, you know, reasons, whatever it is. So I was feeling like that's what's going to happen to Rebecca, is that she's going to end up having a family, but it's not going to be what, you know, like a traditional thing, like the conclusion that Rebecca jumped to that made her very shouty at the psychic.
Yeah, that's because one of the things I love about the series as a whole is that it takes the things you expect. It does take, you know, while it follows the sports tropes really well, all the other tropes, it just goes, you know, hey, let's just throw them up in the air and play 52 pickup. Right. And so, you know, you have these characters who are not going to just suddenly become parents, but they have children in their lives. They have younger people in their lives. They have people that they're guiding, and you know, they play around with definitions like that. And it's kind of like Ted being the dad to the team and wanting to be the dad. And if the whole focus is on bad dads, I kind of like the idea that Ted, in trying to do the reverse of what his father did, of trying to be inclusive and trying to be calm, And you know, all of these things that he does and you know, presenting as Ned Flanders, basically, you know, how could Ned Flanders,
if he cosplayed as Ned Flanders, remember?
Right. How could Ned Flanders be a bad dad? And I love the idea that even doing all that, he might be. He could be. How does that enter into the picture? And you know, where is that balance from going from one extreme to the other? Where do you find that harmony? And maybe that's something that Zava is going to help with, what with meditation and all of that. Well, I don't know.
That's part of why we have Beard, right? That's why they make such a good team, because Beard brings balance to the force. Beard is the one that goes, winning does matter, you know, in the middle of the pub, and makes the and you know, or just, he's the one that knows. I really love that he's channeling his inner soprano, his inner first soprano. That made me very happy. That was a very Kelly noise that he made when somebody said Zava. I also appreciated in the last week we got Higgins channeling his inner Glenn Fleischman, which also made me very happy. So it's like they know that Varani Sports is really us, right?
We actually did, you know, look at each other when that popped up, and I went, oh my God, it's Glenn. He's Glenning. His wife is Glenning.
I said that too. Mr. Kelly, what are you talking? I'm like, it's a long story. Never mind. But yeah, it was very, I'm like, it's an internet thing. It's fine. I want to know. Yeah. I think that's where Beard comes in with this. And that's why, like, it takes the two of them to be a team. And I think, like, personally, Ted doesn't have that, you know, because he did have Michelle to bring balance earlier, you know, when it was both of them parenting Henry. But now who's really parenting Henry? Because who's really parenting Henry right now is Michelle and the marriage counselor,
Dr. Jacob,
helped them get divorced.
Yeah.
And
I have
just before we get away from Coach Beard and balance, we also have another little Aristotelian Chekhovian thing where he points out that Jane, who is still dating Coach Beard after all this time, is actually threatened by Beard's relationship with Ted.
Still. Yeah.
Right? It's like, yeah, you're the rival.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted thinks, yeah, that's crazy. What are you talking about? But it's that relationship. It's that bond and that balance between them.
It's it's the intimacy because they spend so much time together and they talk all the time and they have all the little things. You know, we see them like, you know, oh, I'm in 402. I'm in 404. Howdy, neighbor. You know, and all those things that like all those little things that they do all the time. And, you know, and you see Beard show up for him in every way. Like the first one of the first things out of Beard's mouth is, you know, Ted says, hey, if we run into each other in our dreams, let's mess around, pretend we don't know each other. He says, you got it, stranger. Like he's 100% there for him all the way down to the ground. You know, we find out they swap sandwiches on Fridays and stuff and like all those things. Like, yeah, I could see why Jane would be threatened by Beard's work wife.
Yeah.
So I want to take the opportunity that y'all have given me to talk about the Wordle word of the day. Again, ethics.
Now, that's why we're here.
This is not real life. This is sitcom. Sitcoms do things differently. There was sexual tension between Judge Harry Stone and Marky Post's character, the judge and the assistant DA on Night Court. You know,
oh yeah,
rules. The rules are different on television. but this show does have an interesting relationship with ethics. Dr. Sharon, we haven't seen that much of her yet this season, but she, you know, she is a loose, she is a little bit looser in relating to Ted and relating to the team, you know, going out for the drinks and things like that. I've got a therapist. That is something that that therapist would not do. There are relationships between, between employers and employees. We had Rebecca and Sam. We've got Sam and his head chef. That's looking interesting, depending on where things go.
Yeah.
Things that would you'd side eye at in the real world that you may give a pass to on television. You had Trent outing Nate, burning Nate as a source.
Yeah.
But in that case, they actually did sort of follow through with the consequences of it for that one.
I do want to know what the fallout of that is going to be, though, because we don't know anything about whatever it was before, the relationship between Nate and Trent and what that looks like now.
I just don't know. But I think that the relationships between these characters and what they do and what they're what they're supposed to do. I want to see that explored more in the show, and I don't know how far it's going to go because again, the night court paradigm. we can't overlay the real world on this stuff too deeply. But how are these characters relating to each other? How are they behaving responsibly before each other? I think that, I have seen some news. I've seen some reviews, sort of side-eyeing Jason Sudeikis's, sort of drawing a line between his personal life and the apparent ethos of the show, at least in some people's eyes, that, you know, Ted, the character, is really, he's got a really jaundiced view of professionals and professional standards.
And he's Jesus Quirk superstar.
And and that reaches the apex of that when we're looking at Dr. Jacobs and Michelle and that relationship, which a year and a half later, or no ethical therapist is actually going to date his client.
Yeah, that felt really bad to me for a bunch of reasons, you know, aside from just, you know, at the time, you know, Ted's primary experience with therapy was this dude, and now this dude is going out with his wife. And it was, I felt like it was also a little clunky how they ended up on the phone together. Because the horrible impression just sort of bothered me anyway for several reasons. First of all, it wasn't very good. but it did. I was really like uncomfortable with it, and I sort of didn't, I felt like that could have gone a lot of ways And of all the people in all the world, it didn't have to be like the other person we know exists in Kansas City who is not Ronnie Fauch. Like, she could have been dating literally anybody, and it would have had an impact on Ted that
right.
she is yes. seeing someone else. There's someone else who is comfortable enough to answer the mystery landline. There's, so, you know, that she feels comfortable letting them answer the phone, that, you know, he's there helping get ready so they can all pack up and go to a soccer game and all that kind of stuff. Like, it didn't have to be that guy. So I feel like that has to pay off in some way.
The show is so smart about some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, episode one of this season has Ted telling Henry to tell his mother that Ted loves her, yeah. which you'd think that he would have moved past that by now. It's kind of manipulative. It's kind of wrong, but I feel like the show knows that, but the show didn't have to have Michelle dating her therapist. Their therapist.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I've known close friends who went through divorces whose exes did similar kind of manipulative little things of, you know, oh, you know, I tell them I love them and, you know, oh, we could be a happy family again. And that is like the worst possible choice for that family. And so immediately jumped out in episode one here.
When I saw that, I just, like, because at that point I was giving Ted all kinds of credit. I listened to that and just thought it was like, oh, you know, it's just sort of a general well-wishy kind of thing, because like their relationship when they got in the car, when her and Henry left, like it felt like they were kind of in a place where that could be okay. Because like I have people, like I am married and there are people to whom I am not married who are not biologically related to me, who I will tell them that I love them and it is not romantic or anything like that. I haven't been married to any of those other people.
Sure.
But so it didn't occur to me, like at that point I was like, oh, maybe they're just in a good place now, because yeah, of course he loves her. She's his kid's mom. And so, you know, I'm extending my well wishes and I'm kind of in the habit of, you know, tell your mom I love her, and, you know, that it didn't really go any further than that. So at that point, I didn't read anything into it, and I didn't think of it as manipulative because he didn't add anything about, you know, and, you know, tell her how happy I am or tell her how good I'm doing without her or tell her I'm a complete mess because we're not together anymore, you know, or any of the kind of like petty stuff that I've seen divorced people do and kind of put their kids in the middle of. And it never felt like any of that. So that was part of why I didn't really think about it as being anything insidious and just sort of took it at a face value of like, yeah, he still cares about her very much because of who she is in his life.
I think it's a very subtle thing. I do think it's there, again, because I've seen it enough times.
Yeah.
And it is the kind of thing where you never feel like you're the villain of the story. Everyone feels like they're the hero of their own story.
Everyone thinks they're Luke Skywalker.
And Ted still doesn't quite see that he's not always Jesus Christ Superstar, right? He doesn't see that he's not always Luke Skywalker. And he doesn't see that it's okay to not be, right? We're all human,
right?
And so he's still in that position of tell your wife I love, tell your mother I love her. You know, it's just, it's a shame she left, you know? It's just sort of this implied, I could see it when you put it that way.
I just didn't, when I was watching it, I just didn't pick up on it. And maybe it's just because I know people right now who are on sort of the back end of amicable breakups. And they're like, yeah, I love you, but we are not people who should be together romantically, you know.
Like that the show recognizes that it has enough distance from Ted to not just make him perfect. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It lets us see that he's not.
Right.
And
so
I really hope they like stick that landing.
I hope so too. I've got faith that it will. But you know, issues like Dr. Jacobs
that's the biggest leap of faith I've had to make so far.
Yeah,
that's in the whole show.
Yeah, and those are the moments where you hope that Ted Lasso, although he sees himself as the hero in his own story, you hope that the show doesn't do that. You also hope right. that there's enough separation between Jason Sudeikis and the character of Ted Lasso in this that Ted doesn't have to be right all the time.
Yes.
We have the remainder of this season to find that out for ourselves. And I've got faith in the show. I've got faith in what they're doing. Any parting shots before we wrap things up?
I just want to bring up the thing I liked most in this episode. And I liked a lot of the, you know, I love the show. Of course I do. When they launched into the montage of games and standings and, you know, Zava coming in and even, you know, will I finally get to score my own goal? And he just pops in with just the slightest header. Oh no. And it's Zava. He assisted Zava. Zava's great. And through that whole montage, as soon as I heard the first two notes of the song, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God, because it is a fairly famous song from 1972 mm-hmm. by an Italian artist named Adriano Celentano. And I have to think this is intentional. And again, I'm wondering what, you know, is there more meaning to the song, or is it just that it's a really cool song for that moment? Because it is, but it's a song that was written in a nonsense language. It, you can't translate it. It doesn't mean anything. It mm-hmm. was meant to sound like an English pop song in a language that nobody could understand. And it's called Prison Colinen Chinen Chusol. And it took me the better part of a day to master that a couple of years ago, because it's just such a good song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I'm wondering if there's more meaning to that, playing a nonsense song to their whole triumphant run of games. That's kind of an interesting dramaturgical thing. I don't know.
Like, I know that part of watching Ted, especially, you know, when we got season one, this is my parting shot. Part of what made him interesting was being that ray of sunshine at a point when a lot of things seemed really bleak. And one thing I'm appreciating about this season is that it is so full. It is still in its third season, full of inspiration. Like how this year, obviously, I should be having a Big Lebowski themed birthday party.
I love how it manages to make all of these people three-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And how it's broadened out beyond just Ted, right?
Yeah.
And we could see spinoffs with a lot of these characters. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, Brett Goldstein has said, I would play Roy Kent until I die. I love playing Roy Kent. I would love to see Roy Kent for years. Mm-hmm.
Every one of these characters, there's enough exactly. there. There's enough there that mm-hmm. you don't have to do season four of Ted Lasso. You could do season one of Roy Kent or Keeley or Rebecca.
Yeah, pick we can one. Make Ted a cameo. He can be Nick Fury. You know, he just sort of pops up after the credits in a random episode of someone else's show and just swings by to kind of see how everybody's doing, you know?
The AFC Richmond Cinematic Universe.
All right.
Would watch.
We've hit about an hour and, you know.
I'll text Dawn. We'll start a podcast about it. It'll be fun.
We've hit about an hour, and I think it is time to wrap this one up and get ready for the villain episode next week. David.
Well, before we go, what is your favorite Julie Andrews movie?
Aquaman. Duh.
There you go. And Kelly, what is your favorite Julie Andrews movie?
It's Victor Victoria. Yeah.
All right.
I know there are better ones, but I love that's you said my favorite, not what I think is the best.
That's true. And I love Roy's reasoning for his favorite Julie Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Perfect.
And on that note, as we reveal more about ourselves than we possibly intended. All right. That is 451. That is episode 3 of season 3 of Ted Lasso. This has been Football is Life. For David, for Kelly, I'm Chip. And we'll see you on the other side.